fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak, there's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Not to put you guys on the spot, but when someone says that, what do they usually do? They put you on the spot. Thank you, Kyle, over there. Darren Urban. I'm going to buy you a little bit of time over here on Cardinals Underground. Paul Calvisi. I go with my own Paulie power poll, if you will. When I wonder who is going to benefit the most from the relaxation of the celebration rule, and you're looking at the Cardinals roster, all 90 guys right now. I mean, how would you rank that?
I'm going to steal this for a blog post. I'm just going to warn you ahead of time.
Okay.
Right now.
I'm thinking, you know, Carlos Dansby, what a guy who'd get his money's worth if he ever had like a pick six. Patrick Peterson, no doubt, would have been fined under the old rules, not under the new rules. That's what I'm thinking right here.
I keep thinking of Darnell Dockett riding Antonio Smith like a horse in the playoff game.
Yes, that's a good one. I think, speaking of horse, my dark horse would be the third-round rookie Chad Williams. I'm not sure why. I'm just thinking, you know, if he scores, look out. I think there's something's going to happen right there.
I think it's got to be Patrick and Tyron, where if one of them scores, because you can't do, in the old rules, you couldn't do like a partner thing in the touchdown celebration. Now I figure,
right.
See, I bet you those two would be up to something. Got an idea.
The first name that pops into my head is going to be Chandler Jones. I mean, we've already taken the shackles of New England off of him.
Can he get in the end zone though?
You're right.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a touchdown. It could be after a big play. Don't forget, last year DJ Swearinger got a penalty because he did a group celebration, quote unquote, with Chandler after a sack. So it doesn't have to just be a touchdown. We have all kinds of possibilities.
You know, Chandler has the security of a long-term deal, so he can be himself now.
Yes.
And so I think really he would blossom in the celebration, especially under the relaxed new rules.
You want to ask him if he ordered the code red. He wants to say he ordered the code red. He's ready to burst with the celebration.
You know the guy, though, pound for pound, who would do the best, who would get the most out of it, if he ever did score, and this is really a long shot, would be DJ Humphreys. I mean, if you really had to put your money on a guy, if DJ Humphreys ever actually reached the end zone, sort of like a Dan the Can back in the day, when Dan the Can, you know, he turned it into like he had this 30-yard sort of a meandering touchdown run when really he went about 30 inches and fell into the end zone, you know what I mean? I think DJ Humphreys would be someone to behold.
DJ is always the second guy into the end zone, no matter if it's like a 70-yard touchdown to a receiver. It's always DJ right there photo with a big old smile on his face.
Especially with Earl Watford gone, because Earl was pretty good at that, too.
Yeah, DJ loved it.
Until Earl went down when Fitz, was in San Francisco, wasn't it?
The chest bump.
He went down.
Was heard around the world.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Larry, here's your next blog. Go up to Larry and start pressing him. Well, now with the relaxed celebration rules, let's see it. You know, you've been waiting 13-plus years. 13-plus years, Larry. Let's go. Let's see that celebration
Paul,
that you've had in you.
Oh, Paul, you know me.
Maybe
I don't do that stuff.
He'll hand the ball off with his other hand and really celebrate.
Yeah. That's what happens. He grew up watching Barry Sanders. That's the thing about being a Vikings ball boy. He grew up watching Barry Sanders, and that's what happens over there. Okay. All right. Speaking of the receiver room,
Randy Moss, too, though, and that was...
That's true. You're right about it.
There were some things Randy Moss did that I can't picture Fitz doing. I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's the first thing that popped in my head.
I think of what was the Joe Buck line. That is a disgusting act. I guess so. There you go.
That is what popped into my head.
If you're looking for the two ends, right, of the celebration rules, Larry would be on one and Randy Moss would be on the other side. You're absolutely right.
True.
That's okay. By the way, speaking of Larry and the receivers, can I call that the deepest position group on this Cardinals roster right now as we watch OTAs? I'm just looking at all the guys at receiver. Now, I'm not saying all the guys are going to be Pro Bowlers like Larry Fitzgerald, but there's going to be fierce competition for those five or six spots, correct?
I would think there'll be fierce competition for maybe the last couple. I don't know if there's for all five or six. I mean, obviously Fitz is in, Smoke is in, J.J. Nelson is in. There's three spots for sure. Now, if you're talking about having six and three more spots, then I do think there's some discussion. Chad Williams is in. He's a third round pick.
He would
have to be absolutely.
There's four.
So Jerron
Brown, I'm guessing, unless he's not really 100% coming off the ACL.
I think Jerron Brown is there, But again, you're coming off the injury. You're on a 1-year contract. You know, I don't think anything's a given.
Maybe PUP is an option for him, depending on how he's recovering.
You know, guy who got a shout out from Carson Palmer in Arizona Sports this week was Britton Golden. And he's made a couple really nice grabs out on that field. And we know his prowess on special teams. I'm thinking he's got a spot. I really do.
I wouldn't give him a spot yet, but I think the big question is, like, beyond those first three, who is that fourth receiver? I think it'll kind of work itself out whether they have five or six and who makes it, but who's going to step in and kind of be that fourth guy? Because we had the top four easily last year with Michael Floyd and the other three here. But now, I mean, who do you think it is? Is it Chad Williams as a rookie, or is it one of these guys? Because Aaron Dobson and Jeremy Ross are vets who are in the room too. Who's the number four?
And if one of those guys, if somebody besides Chad Williams is it, then there's five receivers. Because, again, Chad Williams is on this roster, whether he's playing early or not. Mm-hmm. So if you have to have another guy step in, then there's five guys. And then, again, are you even going to have a sixth guy? Now, if Brenton Golden is the sixth guy because he can play really well on special teams, that's a possibility. But, again, that's what these coaches are always looking at right at the end, because that sixth receiver, it's one of those, as Bruce Arians has said many times, is your sixth receiver better than your fifth running back, better than your fifth outside linebacker,
four
whatever.
Tight end?
Yeah. So, and, you know, that's how they're determining those spots at the end of the roster.
And there's some undrafted receivers that looked the part for sure that we saw in rookie minicamp. And they're cheaper. You have them, you know, for a couple of years if you want to keep them and look at them as a potential down the road, keep on, you know, progressing compared to guys that are maybe more maxed out athletically. So it'll be interesting to see which way Bruce Arians goes in that room.
Yeah, number 17, Larry Clark, is the kid who was signed, who was undrafted on the tryout.
The tryout.
Yes. And then it is hard to take your eyes off number 19. He's 6'6".
Well, I didn't hear that name. What was the name?
It was Carlton Agudosi, I believe.
I thought maybe you were trying to avoid it there.
Yeah, I was just throwing out 19 since most people wouldn't know the guy from Rutgers who didn't get them any balls. But, yeah, you're right. I was trying to absolve myself as well of any responsibility with the name.
I agree.
He's indeed incorrect.
He is definitely somebody to notice. And even the
he
size
moves,
of –
he's fluid.
Yeah. Krishan Hogan is another bigger guy who's from an even smaller spot, and he's tough to take your eyes off because he's got the dreads going, so he's got that little
height as Larry
Fitz look. Yeah. But I agree, because I think Agudosi is the guy that you notice right from the get-go, just because when you start talking about 6'6", is he?
6'6".
6'6", and can move and catch the ball. Again, your first thought is, how the heck did this guy go undrafted? The red flags come up because, again, after a while, even guys who are super talented who might play in an offense that isn't that good, if they're super talented, people tend to notice them.
I think he had 35 catches in his whole college career.
Yeah.
It's like crazy.
Now,
they've had
some different things. They've had some different offenses. I know they changed their offense going into his last year. That's what I was told. So I think they have some high hopes. But, again, there's so much. The hardest part about right now, as we all know, is that out here, especially some skill guys have a chance to flash. But what that means, you know, once you get to training camp, once you get to preseason games, it can drastically change. And these guys that you're like, oh, okay. Oh, maybe him. Oh, maybe him. And then you get to training camp and you're like, wow, that guy just fell right off the radar.
Yes. Steven Williams, you know, another big receiver who, when it came game time, just couldn't deliver.
Yep.
But he did manage to get your running back injured in the Green Bay game in the preseason. Who was the kid again?
Brian Williams.
Thank you. Thank you. That was his fault, you realize. That he missed his block.
That.
He was in the wrong spot at the wrong time. And he got chewed out by his receivers coach at the time for causing the injury, which basically was career-ending.
Yes.
It was brutal by Ryan Williams.
Well,
that was
Ryan
not
Williams.
Good. So you mentioned running back and sort of the numbers game when it comes to positions and how it figures into the final 53. The receiver we have not mentioned is Andre Ellington. And as you guys mentioned, the running back spot, 4 or 5, and I'm wondering, you know, if Andre Ellington is a viable candidate at receiver making the transition, Kyle, could you see him going back to running back? Just because if you're looking for a position that's thin other than inside linebacker, I'm looking at that running back room right now.
Yeah, and I think the plan this offseason has been to give him those reps at receiver, see if he can catch on and get more practice, get more comfortable in that situation, because he's moved into the slot a lot in his career, but he's never gone out there full time and run a lot of routes. So I think giving him that practice, but they know he can be a viable running back. I mean, he's not gotten as many snaps as his career has gone on. David Johnson was a big part of that. Being injured a lot was a big part of that. I personally think that he would probably make the team as a running back, as the fourth one, and maybe Elijah Penny stays on the practice squad. But it's certainly a question. I don't think it's totally secure. I think he could get cut if they like Penny and if they like TJ Logan a lot.
I think there's multiple questions that you start talking about when you're talking about what we're doing here. I mean, for Andre, I think working at receiver is as much about if he did make the roster and if he was going to be active on game days, having the ability to do all these different things. Because again, one of Andre's problems is he doesn't do special teams other than he did kickoff returns. And quite frankly, that's going to be TJ Logan's job unless he totally messes it up. And Andre struggled a little bit even on kickoff returns. And because at this point, and even Bruce Arians had said the other day, he's not as aggressive of a runner as maybe he once was. I can understand it. We've talked about it on this podcast before about how all the injuries might have played with him mentally a little bit. But I think the receiver thing is more of a how much more you can do. And the issue he's going to be, like, if you start talking about running backs, I mean, if you decide Penny goes back to the practice squad and you keep Andre Ellington, so other than David Johnson, your backs are Kerwin Williams, not big, and TJ Logan, who's got a little size to him, but he's not big. I mean, he's like 5'9". And then Andre Ellington. I mean, nobody other than David Johnson you could see pounding it between the tackles necessarily. So, and I think that's something that Penny might be able to bring that you might want to have around.
For like late game blowouts?
Yeah, I mean, or in a situation where David needs a blow and you're down on the goal line or whatever. I mean, if you're not going to take a fullback, and obviously we all know they use the tight end in that situation, I just think it's something you might want to keep in mind. I'm curious to know as we get to training camp. I don't think it's going to happen before training camp, but, you know, we start looking at positions, and, you know, you guys can jump in terms of what you guys think, but you start looking at positions that, okay, if Steve Keim makes one of those Steve Keim-y type signings right before training camp or a week or two into training camp, it's cornerback, it's the second cornerback, it's maybe a bigger running back, might be an interior offensive lineman. You know,
pick me, inside linebacker.
Inside linebacker with Dayone's situation, with the ankle surgery. So, I mean, to me, running back is on the table at this point, depending on what they see the rest of the OTAs and minicamp.
I would agree that if Elijah Penny develops, that is a good situation in the eyes of the coaches. They want that bigger running back. They want that guy at 235 pounds who can pound it in there, maybe give David Johnson a blow, you know, avoid some of the physicality of the goal line. You know, I mean, as good as Elijah Penny looked in the fourth quarter of the preseason games a year ago, you know, okay, has he developed? What's he going to look like this preseason? I think that is a big question mark in the running back room.
To me, David would be my short yardage back, my goal line back. I think Kerwin would be the number two, much like the end of last year. I don't think you'd want Elijah Penny carrying the ball near the goal line, knowing that you have a David Johnson who can receive the ball, so he's a receiving threat. He can run the ball. He's big. He can score. So I don't think Elijah Penny would have a role. I think I would keep Andre where it would be more of an insurance thing. Like if David Johnson gets hurt, then it could be Andre and Kerwin. So maybe Andre Ellington's inactive on game days because he doesn't play special teams. But I think just having a guy who knows the offense, who's done it before, I think he would be more valuable on the roster at this point.
Thanks, Coach.
And Andre Ellington, you know, the pass pro, that's where I get into this. Okay, now who can you trust in pass protection, you know, with the running backs? I mean, Kerwin Williams isn't exactly that guy with his stature. No. Andre Ellington has not been known to be proficient in that area. Even David Johnson's very hard on himself when it comes to pass protection, more in terms of recognizing who the rusher is. He's had a lot of mental errors in that regard. You know, Elijah Penny would be a plus in that instance, but
we haven't Kyle's seen him point, enough doing that either. We think he'd be a plus.
I mean, I'm just based on some of the drills we saw last year in camp and his size and his ability to do it. But to Kyle's point, you're right. You're kind of telegraphing things. If you take David Johnson out, it becomes much easier. Red zone defense when David Johnson's not on the field, there's no doubt about that. But there are a lot of formations where David Johnson in a two-back set would go out to the slot, and you're left with one running back. And if you're on the goal line, would you rather have Elijah Penny carrying it or Kerwin Williams from the 2 yard line?
I think Kerwin is such an incredible runner. I know he's not as big as Elijah Penny, but man, I think he can carry the ball.
All right. Well, in the goal line, you know, and they load the box, and yeah, okay. All right, we'll see. I mean, but I can't see a prime time sign at running back. Do you think it might be Chris Johnson? Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't think so. I think the Chris Johnson boat has probably sailed, in large part because I think Chris Johnson, after what he saw, what little he saw last year before he got hurt, was that David Johnson's the man, and you're just not going to get work here. And I think at this point, Chris Johnson is a guy that would at least like to split some time, and that's not going to be here. And if he continues to play, I think he's going to want to go to a place where that opportunity is greater than it would be here.
And maybe he waits for an injury somewhere where he can fit in and get some carries. But to your point about pass protection, that's something that Chris Johnson did really well when he was here. Yep. And he's got some specific skills where I think – it'd be great to have him back, because Bruce has said they wanted him back, and maybe that changes with the draft. But from Chris's perspective, yeah, it seems like he wants to go somewhere else.
You know, this might be another good blog. I'm just filling you guys up with ideas right now, okay?
That's why we love you.
And this may or may not be something that you're aware of, so if I'm repeating something you already have knowledge of, then feel free. But how many times when Chris Johnson was here during David Johnson's rookie year, especially towards the very end, did David Johnson credit Chris Johnson for teaching him what? To be patient.
Yeah.
And if you go back and you track it, now this is just an eyeball thing from yours truly. We'd have to confirm this with the coaches and get someone in here in the know who breaks down the film. But if you look at David Johnson's running style early in his rookie year versus the end of his rookie year, there was a decided change in his style, and that was he was waiting much longer for blocks to develop, setting up some of the guys. And to hear him tell it, just to the general media, this wasn't an exclusive one-on-one conversation, he would repeatedly cite Chris Johnson for helping him out in the running back room, being more patient, which is funny because if you think of Chris Johnson, at least I do, in his early days with the Titans, the guy who just hit the whole 100 miles an hour with a 4.240.
Look, I think Chris Johnson did a great job when he was here. It was too bad he got hurt last year. You know, and again, you mentioned off the top the celebration rule change. Another rule change that's going to come about is now there's going to be two guys that teams are allowed to bring back from IR instead of just one. And last year, it was between Tyvon Branch, the safety, and Chris Johnson, who came back. They both had similar groin injuries. They went with Tyvon Branch because of the issues they had in the defensive backfield and with Tyrann Mathieu. Unfortunately, that somewhat backfired because Branch got hurt almost immediately after he came back. But if there had been two possibilities, there's a good chance Chris Johnson plays again last year, and maybe that changes things going into this year. It's funny, I keep thinking back, you keep talking about how David would credit Chris. I mean, if David doesn't get hurt in training camp early on with a hamstring, with Andre Ellington already bothered by the hamstring, there's a chance that Chris Johnson never even signs here.
Yeah, you're right.
And that ended up being brilliant. And obviously Chris Johnson for most of 2015 was the best running back this team had. And I mean, that was one of the magical parts of 2015 to me for this team was you went into that season, you had Chris Johnson and David Johnson on the roster, but your starting running back going into the year was Andre Ellington. And if he hadn't gotten hurt in the opener, who knows what would have happened? But instead, Chris Johnson comes in, is electric, and is among the league leaders most of the season. Then he has the bad knee injury, and everybody's like, oh, dang, that's too bad because that was such a great story. And David Johnson steps in, and now David Johnson becomes David Johnson. It's just I'm really off track right now, but I'm just saying that's mm-hmm. it's amazing to think kind of how all this plays out. And now we're talking about whether Chris Johnson should be brought back as David's backup, but he probably won't get any work because David's so good. I mean, it's weird how the league works.
One of David Johnson's criticisms coming out was he didn't have the best vision. And like you said, when he's just running up the gut, he didn't make as much as maybe he should have with all his physical skills. And whether it was Chris, whether it was help from Stump Mitchell or the coaching staff, you're right. He's done a great job figuring out those lanes, and I think he's a master at it now, knowing where to go, using patience, knowing that he's got the supreme athleticism, but waiting for those blocks to set him up first. So, and I think Chris was a big part of that. I think he was a nice veteran to have.
I mean, just tell me if you think I'm on the right track here. The two best running backs in the NFL right now are also the two most patient running backs in the NFL, Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. Two guys who really take their time letting blocks develop and then reacting accordingly.
I'm sure there's a lot of people in Dallas who might be angry with that comment.
That's right.
But
that's right. We don't recognize rookies yet until the second season starts.
And throw LeSean McCoy in there too, who's also very patient. Yeah. It's definitely a skill to grab the ball and know you just want to fire through that hole because of what you can do and how fast you are, but to be patient, and sometimes it can backfire if you're not as good as Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson.
I think David Johnson has – he can make the argument that he's the best in the league right now with everything he does, but I'm not putting him on the Le'Veon Bell patience pedestal yet, just because Le'Veon Bell is that – what he does with his patience is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
So I think it's safe to presume that Steve Keim is looking at the OTAs. He'll be watching minicamp. He's trying to assess these position groups. Do we need another running back? Do we need another corner, to Darren's point? You know, anecdotally, I think I've heard that Justin Bethel looks pretty darn good in these OTAs. You know, does that assuage some of the fears or concerns that Kai might have, the need for a veteran like a Marcus Cooper to make a move like that, you know, a Mike Jenkins? And then you have inside linebacker, and this is just me looking at the roster and just going, oh, boy, they're thin. You guys agree or disagree, Kyle? Thin inside linebacker or not?
I mean, I think any time you get to the second team on any position, there are going to be questions. I talked to Larry Foote about Scooby Wright, and he was just glowing about him. He didn't think coming into the draft that he could move from pass rusher to inside linebacker. He said he's just not loose enough. He can't play in coverage. And then he got here, and he said, oh, wow, I was wrong about you. He tells Scooby that all the time. Man, I didn't think you could make it. So I think they're pretty high on him, and the fact that he's a backup at one spot, I think it's a nice thing to have. Gabe Martin's been around for a while. So, yeah, if you lose another linebacker, now you're talking about either Dansby or Reddick, that would be two starting inside linebackers down. Of course, you're going to have a drop-off, but I think if you look at any position on the team, outside linebacker, if you lost one of those guys, if you lost Patrick Peterson, I mean, I think overall it's a spot that, yeah, you'd want more depth, but I think that's just the reality of the NFL when you get to the second string.
I don't know if I would look at this position any significantly different than I have the last couple of years. Now, could you want more depth? Yes, but I mean, you know, last year they had some questions going into it, and you know, Kevin Minter was solid, you know, maybe not, and obviously Dayone was thought to be up there, and he obviously didn't have the kind of year last year, and we now know that the ankle might have been a big part of it, and, sure. And now he had to have the ankle surgery. So my concerns are just, you know, you are talking about having an older starter, number one, in Carlos Dansby, which like Larry Foote, you know, again, you had a situation where after the draft you thought, okay, maybe we got these three guys to do these two spots, and hey, we could be in a pretty good position. And it reminds me, when Foote came in, he was going to kind of be the third guy, because they already had Darrell Washington and they had drafted Minter, and then all of a sudden Darrell got suspended, and in some ways that's kind of like what you're facing right now with Dayone, with the uncertainty of when he can come back. So you get a little worried about, okay, if Carlos has to play all the time all year, can he hold up? And the Reddick thing, here's how I look at it. It's kind of funny. All I heard the last 2 years is, oh my God, the Cardinals keep getting a first round pick and he's not playing. What the hell? What the hell? What the hell? Well, now your first round pick's playing. So,
and I'm terrified. Based on the last 2 years. No, I really am. He's a rookie and he oozes talent. You can see it out there already, but he's a rookie. Did I say he's a rookie? And he's making a position change.
Yeah. And I get that. And I guess it's one of those, be careful what you wish for. This is part of what the Cardinals have done the last couple of years, is put themselves in a position so that guy doesn't have to play right away. And when we saw last year with Brandon Williams, where they had to play him because of all the injuries and all the other guys that they tried to put in front of him, and then all of a sudden he's stuck out there, not because they wanted to, because they had to.
Yeah, at least Hassan's an inside linebacker instead of a corner, where we saw True. Brandon make a mistake and it's a 40-yard touchdown. Right. If Reddick makes a mistake, hopefully it's a 15-yard gain, not a 50-yard gain. But yeah, I think it's not the best scenario to have a rookie starting who's moving from defensive end inside, hasn't done it in college.
And if there's one guy who's going to line up another guy at inside linebacker, I trust Carlos Dansby,
yes.
right? I
mean,
there's one guy who can give him a heads up, mm-hmm. sort of like Larry Foote did back in the day.
Yes, I would agree that's a very good situation for Hassan Reddick, and I think that will pay off. And the other thing Reddick's got going for him is he knows in May there's a good chance he's going to start in the opening game because Dayone is where he is. Now, hopefully Dayone comes back. Hopefully he comes back sooner rather than later. We'll kind of see how that plays out. But if he doesn't, Reddick's already in the mindset that he's going to have to play. So if he plays, you know, at least he's ready for it.
And Larry Foote said he has that walk-on mentality still where he came in here. He's a first-round pick now, but he's still working hard. He still feels like I have something to prove. So if he's going to put in the work mentally, learn the playbook, learn how to play the position – you know, you have a few months to try to really figure out what you're doing, and if he works hard, he'll be a lot better off.
By the way, if there's one guy that doesn't surprise me at all that he's very blunt with a player as a coach, it's Larry Foote. Other than Bruce Arians himself, there's probably nobody more blunt on that Cardinals coaching staff than Larry Foote. Come on now, right?
I'll put it a co-vote with Brenton Buckner.
That's true. Okay.
And actually, right. Kevin Ross.
Yeah.
Actually, Goodwin has probably done it a couple times.
Yeah, you're right. Based on what we see in training camp, you're right. It's stiff competition.
It is.
You know where you stand if you're a Cardinals player with
right.
your coaches.
No doubt. So, by the way, are there going to be any spontaneous displays of emotion in the press box? Have they relaxed that rule? Is there cheering in the press box now? Did Roger Goodell go that far?
I feel fairly confident if there is any of that. Somebody like Mark Dalton will make sure that doesn't happen again.
I see. He'll bring the hammer.
That would be my guess.
Okay, wait a minute. Can I revise my poll? If there's one guy who's going to be brutally honest with you, it's Mark Dalton, the VP of Media
Relations.
True. He will shoot you straight.
That is a definite truism.
He's right up there with the head coach. Okay. Anything else that's out there on the that we need to know about as we finish up with OTAs, get into the mini camp mode, going into the 3-day weekend? What else stands out right now, guys?
Not too much quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still, again, it's early. I talking, like I said earlier, Paul, I mean, this time we talk about all this stuff. I'm glad we're here doing this on a weekly basis, breaking this down, but there's just so little you can actually take away from this right now.
The margin of error right now, based on what we see, is huge.
They're playing soccer, Paul. Not playing football.
What always sticks out to me is because Bruce Arians will be asked questions about guys, and he'll answer it, and usually he's optimistic this time of year, but it's when he brings up guys without anybody asking about them is when it really kind of piques
That's
your
true.
Interest. Like, he mentioned Larry Clark without being asked. It's like, okay, he really likes this guy. So that's what I listen for in press conferences, if he's going to bring up a certain player, or if you just ask a general question and he goes to someone, that means something because that means they're really standing out.
That's why I was intrigued by that Carson Palmer when he shout out Britton Golden. That was kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah.
Although, look, how much better can Britton Golden get in year three or four of his career? Okay. But, you know, it's intriguing. I'm like you. I always listen for those guys they bring up just without being asked about it. So mm-hmm. interesting. By the way, he's already fielding the questions, Carson, you know, about whether this is it. And Larry said at Bruce Arians, the Arians Family Foundation event, he's going to address it once mm-hmm. in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Are we all presuming this is going to be their last year for both guys? Are we all presuming automatically?
Are we presuming
that 2017 is going to be the final season for both Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer? Because people seem to think that. And when I answer no, it's not necessarily the last year, they look at me like I'm crazy.
Well, I think we're presuming it just the same way we were presuming it last year. Here's the thing, and this is kind of how I look at it and why I kind of chuckle a little bit at Larry's I'm going to address it one time. One, no, you're not. You're going to address it more than once because you're going to be forced to address it more than once because you know what's going to happen in training camp? You're going to say, I'm going to decide after the season. Just like Carson said last week, he didn't say I was only going to address it once, but he said, there's no way you can make this decision in May. You can't even make it November and December. It's going to be after the season. So if you're not going to make a decision either way, it's going to be out there still. Larry, or Carson for that matter, if they really want to put an end to the speculation, all they got to do is one thing. I am playing in 2018, or I am definitely not playing in 2018. That'll end the speculation. But if you don't say definitively, the speculation ain't going anywhere.
I'm guessing Fitz has a better idea than Carson right now, where I believe Carson when he says it's really related to physically how I feel, because it seems like mentally Carson really loves it and he wants to play for a long, long time. Fitz has always been a little bit less of that, like, hey, I want to end at a certain time on my own volition. So I'm more presuming that this will be Fitz's last year, but I don't think Carson – I think Carson is more up in the air. Depending on how he does, how he feels, I think there's more factors involved. I think Fitz will just kind of decide whenever he's done. And with the way it went last year, when he gave it serious thought, I would be more surprised if he came back after this season.
I would say if Carson gets sacked another 40 times and hit another 100 times, he's not coming back. That would be my gut feel on Carson.
And I think that's fair. And again, that's one of those things where the season has to play out.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot changes if this team was much more successful last year and made a deep playoff run. Maybe they address it. That's the one thing those two guys don't say when they talk about it. They both talk about it. You got to have time after the season and you let your body recover and everything. I do believe there is a team factor involved, not just where the team is headed, but where it just was and you know, getting a sour taste out of the mouth. I do think that has a factor in it, but it all goes together. And again, if we're talking about the subject of the subject of it being brought up, no matter what happens, whether they're saying they're staying or they're saying they're going, I mean, I love Fitz, but you know, Fitz understands the deal. He understands he's the face of the franchise. He understands everybody wants to talk to him. He doesn't love it. He does it. He does it better than he used to.
Oh yeah.
But this is an extension of that. This is the extension of, if Larry Fitzgerald really had a choice, he wouldn't talk to the media every week, period. Much less about, it doesn't have to do with the retirement. He just would rather just punt. He'd rather not have to do it. You know,
he's going into the last year of his deal, right?
Correct.
Carson still has 2 years left?
He's got through 18.
Through 18?
So, yeah.
Okay. Do you think, sort of like last year in August, there might be an extension done to Larry's contract to try and eliminate any chatter or speculation?
I doubt it. I don't think so. I think if he wants to play, I think they would just work it out. It'd be pretty easy after the year. Hey, we'll sign you to another $11 million, $10 million, something like that. I don't think it would have to be this huge negotiation at this point, because it seemed like it was pretty easy last year. They just plucked one on. But even if he did it, it's not going to end the questions. I mean, people realize that it's when he came out and publicly said, hey, I'm considering retirement last year, people know it's in his mind. So whether he's got 1 year or 2 years, I don't think matters.
See, the thing is, with a contract anymore, that doesn't mean anything. We saw that with Kurt Warner. Having a year left on your contract means zero, because if you retire, you just don't get paid that money. So that doesn't mean anything. I agree with Kyle. I think if you had to add another year, it's pretty easy. I mean, I think fans would get a little freaked out a little bit if there was a possibility he could play next year and he didn't have a contract done. But we've been through this too many times. This team, I feel, and I've said this before, I feel like when Fitz, the last time not this last 1 year extension, but the time before that was the time he was going to leave, if he was going to leave. Mm-hmm. If he really wanted to, when they had to renegotiate because of the salary cap problem, if he really wanted out and really wanted to go to Minnesota or whatever it might have been, that was when he had a chance to move on. Now, I think he's just tied to this franchise too much. I think the legacy means too much to him, and he's too close to the end. And I just, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I don't think that's a factor.
I bring that up just because in the national media, every time it's going to be Larry Fitzgerald, who's in the last year of his contract, there, that's going to be a catalyst for all the discussion and the chat and everything that Larry wants to avoid. I mean, it's what it's going to be.
But see, again, here's the thing, and this is where I agree with Kyle. There is no way to shut this down unless you say, I am playing next year. Mm-hmm. I am absolutely playing next year. Don't ask me about it again. Mm-hmm. I'm playing next year.
So whether he retires this year or next year or 5 years from now, he's got to face it at some point.
Not only has he got to face it, if he's talking about it 5 years from now, we're going to talk about it every single year. I don't care if he signs a 5-year extension right now. We are going to ask him every year, because the door has already been opened. He already admitted it's been a thought. And we'll see across the league. Ben Roethlisberger came out this week and said, I'm not committing playing past this season. And he said it after the season. He wasn't even committed to this year. Now he is. But now I don't know. We'll see after this season where I am. If you're a superstar player and you open that door, and there's nothing wrong with opening the door, but you just got to know that that's going to come with the territory. And I know you don't necessarily love it. And I've got some fans saying, I don't know why they don't just leave Larry alone. Because you don't, that's not what happens. People want to know. And again, I will say it for the fifth time. There's an easy way to end it. But if you're going to leave the door open either way, then it's not going to be over.
He can handle it. He's mentally tough enough
yes,
to handle
that's,
it.
Yes, that's the other yeah. thing.
And all of us have incurred the Larry wrath once the cameras are off and he's needling us behind the scenes and taking pot shots and verbal hit jobs on us. So we know yes. he can dish it
although,
out as well.
Although I will
way.
Say, it, the wrath, I don't want anybody getting the wrong idea. Larry wrath is like is giving you crap. Wrath. Right, it's not like anger.
Usually about my shoes. He always bags on my shoes. It's really not cool.
He finds a way to bag on
everybody. Shoes. Or my hair. Or my hair. One or the other. It's. By the way, I want to change my vote going all the way back about a half hour ago. Drew Stanton is going to be the guy who's going to lead my power pole. How could I forget about the Stanton up in Seattle?
Yeah.
That's a solid point.
There we go.
Now he's going to have backup dancers now?
Yeah. Can he go on the field
and
do it?
I like that. Get some of the rookies behind him. Get the Zach Dysert and Blaine Gabbert behind him. That'd be solid. Alrighty, that's a good visual to end on. That is Cardinals Underground.